Hello and welcome to Pilot Season, where we're a cast of little people wearing weird dog costumes, and there's a small hand puppet mouse, which you can't see because this is all audio. I'm Patrick Brogan, and alongside me is Alan Byrne. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Patrick. I think you painted a nice picture there.
I think I did. A nice, terrifying picture.
Accurate description of what the recording process of this episode is like.
Yes, as well as, coincidentally enough, a description of this thing we watched.
How odd that.
Yes.
We didn't even plan this. It was just Munchkin Actor Dog Suit Day.
Little People Actor Dog Suit Day.
No, you said some of them were actually Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, that's true.
So that is a description.
I think two of them were actually Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz.
Admittedly, it's still a derogatory term, and I'm very, very apologetic.
So we're talking about The Adventures of Super Pup, which is the oldest thing we've covered so far, because it was made in 1958, and oh boy, does that kind of tell.
Definitely.
It's basically Superman, but with all dogs.
I think we should get into the story behind this.
Okay, I'm going to let you do that.
Right, so you might be aware that there was a very popular TV show of Superman in the 50s starring George Reeve. In 1959, which I believe is the same year this was made, George Reeve was found dead under circumstances that were ruled suicide, but some people have it up in the air.
This was made in 1958,
the year before then. This left the producers of the show with a problem. They had a successful show and no lead actor. So they decided to make two different pilots and test them out to see which one would gain traction and apparently sponsors. One of them was a pilot for The Adventures of Superboy, starring a teenaged Superman. And like, that was ever going to be a successful show, eh?
Nah,
teenage
never.
Superman. Stupid idea.
Can't start taking off at all.
So they also, to hedge their bets, made this one. The Adventures of Super Pup. Starring a load of actors in dog masks.
Yes, the actors included Billy Curtis as Bark Bent / Super Pup. He was an American actor who had dwarfism, as did everyone in this episode. Apart from us, he was a Munchkin City father in The Wizard of Oz. He was also in Alfred Hitchcock's Saboteur. He appeared in Superman and the Mole Men. He was also in The Terror of Tiny Town. I don't know if you know what that is, Alan.
That sounds like a Mystery Science Theater episode.
It's not, but it is basically a Western where all the actors were little people. It's mental. He was in Batman 66, where he played Midget in two episodes. He was Copper-Skinned Ambassador in Star Trek The Original Series. And he was also in The Twilight Zone in 1986. It seems to be one of his last roles, according to Wikipedia, as Creature. He also played Midget three or four different times in his career. It wasn't at all...
Typecast,
no. The other actors were that are credited on Wikipedia anyway include Angelo Rosito, or Little Angie, or Mo. He was in Freaks.
Freaks. One of us.
Exactly. Todd Browning's Freaks. He, I don't know what character, I assume he played one of the dwarf characters. I don't know, I haven't seen Freaks in a
now
very, very long time.
Now who's typecasting people?
It's called dwarfism. That's allowed. They prefer to be called dwarves. Welcome to Politically Correct Theater. He was also in Child Bride. Have you heard of Child Bride, Alan?
It's ringing a vague bell.
It's one of the only films that the MST... Well, one of the film. I think the only film that the Mystery Science Theater 3000 producers said they wouldn't do because it was too disturbing. Kevin Murphy said he needed a good cry and a shower after watching it, because it does include a topless nude swimming scene performed by a 12-year-old girl.
Ugh.
Yeah. Nope, 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 nope. Well, exploitation films, always classy. He was also in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Oh, wow. Best Mad Max.
He played
Master
Master.
Blaster.
Not just Master.
Oh.
Not Master Blaster. Just Master. And he was on the cover of Tom Waits's Swordfish Trombones album. And the other actor was sorry. As Professor Sheepdip, the villain of the piece, was Harry Monty, who was also a he was a winged monkey and a munchkin in The Wizard of Oz.
Double job in it.
Basically, lots of short people, and as you know, Alan, short people got no reason to live. Getting my Randy Newman quotes out there early. That song, however, not about hating short people, it's about racism. It's a satire. Because Randy Newman is an amazing songwriter, and you should all appreciate him.
Yes, Patrick.
It's true.
I know, I've just been on the receiving end of this diatribe more than once.
So let's talk about Super Pup then.
Yes, let's do that.
It opens up with basically what is the Superman intro. He's faster than a speeding
He's
thing.
faster than the speediest jet, more powerful than the mightiest rocket, and able to fly around the world faster than you can say Super Pup.
Well, Super Pup's kind of a long word.
Yeah, it's still a fairly reasonable accomplishment.
Superman, a bit faster.
Yeah.
Shorter word.
Considering the fastest thing able to go around the world is the International Space Station, Patrick. And that can only do it 8 times a day.
Name International Space Station is a lot longer than that,
Yeah,
so.
and it doesn't even go around that fast.
Do we really rate things on how fast they can go around stuff by how long they're. Takes to say their name, because I feel like the science of this entire endeavor is slightly off.
This is a worthy accomplishment, Patrick, and you are demeaning it.
He also has a mouse that lives in his drawer.
A mouse who's never named.
No, just sort of lives in the drawer and pops out at moments either to talk mostly to the audience and occasionally to the other characters.
I assume he's meant to be Jimmy Olsen because he's dressed like Jimmy Olsen. I wonder if they just couldn't come up with a mouse pun for Jimmy Olsen so they didn't give him a name.
I feel like Pamela Poodle did give him a name, but I can't remember what it was because I couldn't understand what she was saying a lot of the time. She had a very high-pitched voice. Also, there's a haunted intercom.
Yeah.
So that intercom just goes nuts because the chief is calling the chief Terry Bite is calling Bark Bent. Yes, these are the
Puns.
names. Puns into his office to complain at him about. Nothing in particular, but certainly what he does. When we meet Terry Bite, he's telling a woman that he can't help it if the newsboy throws her paper onto the roof, which is true, a very valid thing to say as a newspaper editor. It's not really your job to distribute the newspapers; it's your job to make sure the newspapers are, put together. Then up to the people who distribute them. That's how newspapers work, as far as I understand.
It seems to be a fairly accurate summation of a dead process. Thank you, Mr. TU historian.
That's
We got the
hilarious.
internets now. We don't need none of your papers.
The chief tells us that Professor Sheepdip was sent to jail for a very long time.
Thanks, Super Pup.
Yeah, and that Bark Bent is really a scaredy cat dog. This is re and this is really weird. This is like that Victorian museum where they took all the cats and they dressed them as people and put them in people
I
poses.
don't think it's quite that creepy.
It's on that level.
It does have the advantage of not using actual dogs to do this.
Yeah, which I guess is a
It
plus.
puts it above the creepy Victorian cat taxidermy museum place
I
shutter.
suppose the 1950s, I mean, you wouldn't put it beyond them to use real animals.
But they're harder to work with.
A little bit harder than people in costumes. But apparently Professor Sheepdip can hear them in the jail cell, and he has a saw
Yes.
in the jail cell.
Yeah, it probably came in a cake. That's how you get stuff into jail cells.
Okay, I know this is meant to be, for probably for very young children, but still, I can't figure out the logic here of how he can hear them, and two, how he gets the saw into the jail. And if they're gonna do this stuff, why do they do a thing that they do later on where they blatantly acknowledge a continuity error? So, Professor Sheepdip, it's a stupid name. He cuts his way out of the jail cell, and the entire time, Beagle, the police officer, is making little paper dolls and doesn't really pay attention until the guy's actually gone and apparently in the desert. Why would
Yes,
they build a jail cell in the desert?
well, if they escape, where are they going to go?
Apparently back to his desert hideout.
Well, they weren't expecting him to have a car, Patrick.
I wasn't expecting the police dog to have a cannon.
Yes, the police dog wheels out the tiniest cannon.
It is literally the tiniest cannon. He holds it between his legs.
And then fires it at the getaway car, which causes a massive explosion
The first of many.
and misses the car.
Because he's incompetent. He then tries to get into his car and it doesn't start, so he hits it with his, I don't know, he hits it with a stick or a club or something, and then it starts, and we get into a car chase involving people dressed as dogs. And already I'm thinking that this has more shots of cars driving than the opening 20 minutes of Manos.
Gotta use that stock footage.
So it's not even stock footage. They shot that footage. Because there are dog masks in those
And you
cars.
know how it is. You shoot the footage in the pilot and then you can use it whenever.
They must have had no budget for this at all because they couldn't build an outdoor set. I mean, bits of cardboard would probably have done the job. Just paint them, put them in the back and make it look like a city. But no, we're apparently in a desert. And then he does the whole Bugs Bunny thing Sheepdip does of changing the sign and says, to the city, to he went this way. And of course, the police officer dog, who by the way is also British.
Well, he's a beagle.
Why is he British? And stereotypical police characters in American entertainment are usually Irish.
Yep, this is pushing boundaries.
I don't understand any of this. I literally don't. And then the mouse is aware of the audience and talking to them about stuff for like 3 seconds at a time. And when the dog cop realizes that he's lost Professor Sheepdip, where does he go? Straight to the newspaper office.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
Well, I'm willing to accept that they decided to go full on Looney Tunes, but with people in dog suits here. That's fine. It's the internal consistency of the plot that I have problems with.
Because you think the last thing the police would want to do when,
Is to publicize this massive blunder.
yes, by going straight to the police or to the editor of the newspaper and saying, "What do you want me to do about it? I did the best I could." Basically going, "Well, I did what I could. I made paper dolls and fired a cannon at him. Literally nothing else I can do as an officer of the law."
Unimpeachable.
Literally could do nothing else except run straight to the media, where for some reason they don't really have much of a confidence in the fact that Super Pup will save them. I guess they think this whole Super Pup thing was like a one-off, because Terry Bikes like, "I don't count on Super Pup coming to save us," even though Bark Bent, who was being absolutely terrible at hiding his super identity, was going, "Yeah, I think I'll sort that out."
You're acting like you're Super Pup.
Funny he turned up just around the time you did. But he doesn't wear glasses.
Yeah, completely different dog.
Yes, and his voice is slightly more authoritative than yours because you're very skittish and nervous. Funny how these investigative reporters can't figure this out.
Well, you say investigative reporters. They don't really do much investigation.
Yeah, and later on, Pamela Poodle does get called out to cover a tea party, which is, hard-hitting journalism right there. Meanwhile, Sheepdip is making a chemical that appears to turn paper airplanes into nuclear weapons.
Yes, let's stay a while and discuss this scene,
Yes,
Patrick.
let's.
So Professor Sheepdip has a vial of bubbling liquid, which he dips the tip of a paper airplane into, walks over to the window, throws it out the window, and then we get footage of a nuclear explosion.
And they react like it's a nuclear explosion. They get the blowback from it and everything. What troubles me is his henchmen actually tasted a little bit of that and had no effects
Maybe
whatsoever.
saliva is the neutralizing ingredient.
The effect of this bomb sort of wavers as the episode goes along, because the first time you see it, it's full on like nuclear explosion, but as it goes on, it's used maybe once more, and the explosion, not so much a big deal. And of course, when you've got a nuclear bomb, you make this sort of weird nuclear petrol bomb thing and decide that you'll put your henchman into a grandfather clock and he will walk to the newspaper office and basically become a suicide bomber.
Yes, this is a really weird plan.
Yes.
First off, his target is the Bugle for
Yes.
slander, accurately reporting that he is a villain in jail. Never explained.
Lack of other available sets
Most
to
likely.
the producers.
And he sends his henchman, Wolfingham, in a grandfather clock with just a big bottle of this incredibly explosive, or maybe not so incredible, liquid, and tells him when he gets there to light the fuse. Flawless, flawless
Yes.
plan.
Which, to be fair to him, the henchman does sort of go, "Oh, what about me?" And I figured Dr. Cheap was like, take one for the team. Blow yourself up. I won't really miss you."
I'm evil.
And he walks the entire way in the grandfather clock costume, which gets even weirder when he gets into the actual building.
But first, Bark Bent
But
must
first,
stop putting sandwiches in his drawer because it will attract mice.
says a mouse. Oh boy.
Jokes!
Jokes, jokes everywhere. Brent doesn't know where to find Sheepdip. Mouse says, "Why don't you check the yellow pages?" This is just hit it with hammers, please. The mouse is the worst part of this. I could stand the weird talking dogs, but the mouse? No. It doesn't even do anything. It just sort of pops out of a drawer every few minutes and talks to the audience in a stupid, squeaky voice.
It's the audience identification figure. I mean, haven't we all identified as a mouse?
Not really. I could identify more. I could identify more with the dogs than the mouse, because at least the dogs seem to serve a purpose,
So
even if they're all idiots.
it's just me?
Yeah, just you.
Okay then.
So, sorry, Alan. I mean,
So a clock walks out of a lift.
a perfectly regular sentence.
Oh, sorry. It walks out of a lift sinisterly.
Because it's playing sinister music in the background. Literally the dun 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 kind of music.
Yes, public
They
domain,
put the Lone
guys.
yeah, they put the Lone Ranger music at certain points in
It's
this.
the William Tell overture, Patrick. The Lone Ranger doesn't have exclusivity over it.
I couldn't remember, but yeah, it's associated with the Lone Ranger. Superman's got his own theme, which they use.
Not as much as they use William Tell, though.
No, obviously they didn't have enough money to use that over enough. But the clock is walking through the building. Nobody takes any notice. There's like a half a second scene of Terry Bide talking to Beagle, the police dog, and like, "Well, what are you going to do, Beagle?" And he goes, "Well," and it cuts back to a clock walking through a hall. A perfectly normal sight in this world of talking dogs, apparently. It walks right into the newspaper editor's office. Beagle walks into it, doesn't faze him that a clock just walked into the room that wasn't there before, and then the newspaper editor has a conversation with the talking grandfather clock.
You missed a bit where Beagle apologized for bumping into the
And that as well happens.
clock. But
And
yeah, Terry White says, "What's the time?" shaking his wristwatch. And Wolfingham looks at his own watch and then sets the face of the clock to be the correct time. To which Terry responds, "Thank you."
then, well, Wolfingham, because he doesn't have a match, asks Terry Bight to light the bomb for him. Which.
he comes out the door of the grandfather clock, asks for a light, and then Terry lights it because he's distracted with all his work.
And when he notices that he's lit a bomb, we get the most terrifying face. Like, literally, it's a version of the puppet with its eyes bulging out and a shocked look on its face, and it is terrifying.
The best bit about this is at that point, the video goes to black and white because there's
Exactly,
no
yeah.
surviving color footage of the second half of this pilot. For a minute there, I thought it was just like a really interesting directorial choice.
This has gone suddenly very artsy.
There's a lot more going on here than I gave the director credit for.
No, just ran out of money.
Well, no, there's no surviving color footage of the second half of the pilot, so they have to use the black and white one in the release.
God, that's gonna replace the whole of my nightmares.
Yeah,
He naturally, when you're threatened with a bomb, you call for your reporter
of course.
to come in and help you. And of course, what Bark Bent does is he turns himself into a super pup.
Can we talk about how terrible Backbend is at both jobs he does? Because
Yes,
he is
we can.
asleep at his desk. He is trying to track down a supervillain, and he decides to just go for a nap.
That's about par for the course with the competency levels of everyone in this,
And also,
really.
it takes a mouse to wake him up, and not Terry yelling at him over the intercom. He has to be physically shaken awake by a mouse.
But the mouse does bring him into action. He gets into his super pup outfit, which I think they disguise the transition by actually using the mouse here, because
Yeah.
the mouse talks to the audience, then super pup appears, which is very hard to say. So obviously they did not have the budget to show a transformation scene here. The Lone Ranger theme plays and Spup bounds in through the wall, I think. Starts just throwing stuff from Terry Bight's desk out the window.
In Super Pup's defense, Terry just said, "Get it out of here."
This is true.
I mean, how are you meant to know what that is? Is it the papers on the desk? Is it the typewriter? Is it the suddenly present grandfather clock watch?
It could be anything, because he should know that, a grandfather clock does not live right in front of this dog editor's desk. But apparently not. And this ends up with Terry Bight calling Super Pup an idiot because he's throwing all of Terry Bight's work out the window.
Which, yeah, fair.
Fair. And realizes, oh, there's a giant grandfather clock. I should fly out the window with that. Which he does. He flies to the air with the Wolfingham looking out every so often, saying that he wants to get dropped home, so Super Pup drops the clock onto Professor Sheepdip's hideout, and it explodes in a considerably smaller explosion than we last saw.
There, lying on the ground, dazed and confused.
But even like Tweety Bird sound effects, I think. So he went from this thing is potentially a devastating nuclear device to it'll just break your grandfather clock and maybe make you look a bit shabby.
And then the super pup flies away. Job done. I got rid of the clock. That's what I was asked to do.
I kind of feel like this is what would happen if dogs were superheroes. Because Dogs aren't necessarily the most cerebral creatures, from my experience. They'd basically be awful at their jobs.
Probably, but I don't think the rest of the dogs would
Probably
complain.
not, no. Of course, the plot is not over yet. There is still 10 more minutes because Pamela the Poodle gets a call.
From Mrs.
Yes.
Gutrocks, and not Professor Sheeplet putting on a
Nope.
woman's voice.
And he gives her the exact same address that Wolfingham just gave, which was like, I don't know, something, something.
It was 23½ Desert Gulch or
Yeah.
something.
And she's all like, oh, okay, I will go cover your tea party, Mrs. Gotrocks.
For the society
Yes.
pages. That's
Because
part
she's a
of a newspaper.
lady and she can only cover ladies' things. This is the late 50s. Women aren't allowed to be real people yet, especially dog women. Feminism hasn't happened yet, Alan. So only women can really well, that's not really true, but only women can cover the things like tea parties. Men cover, in fact, actually, Barkbench doesn't do anything in this entire episode, journalistically speaking.
He claims to be a journalist. That's about the height
And
of
neither does
it.
Terry Bott. He doesn't do anything either. She's the only one who actually goes and does any reporting, and it results in her getting kidnapped. I mean, sure, she's stupid.
But at least she's doing her damn job.
Exactly. And she tells the mouse, who then relays the message to Bark Bent that she's gone to blah 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 blah. And Bark Bent is fully aware that Mrs. Gotrocks is on the French Riviera, and he doesn't twig that, you know, they. Mouse just gave the address of the place he just went to.
Like 3 minutes ago.
Nope, but Mrs. Gotrock's apparently a real person, or dog, and she goes to the French Riviera, and maybe she also lives with Sheepdip? If this is to be believed, I don't know. I'm starting to think they didn't put too much thought into the plot of this. Just a little bit.
Starting to
Just
think.
starting, just now. Just...
Yeah, right now is when the wheels go off the plot.
There's more Terry Bite yelling about Bark Bent because apparently Terry Bite just hates him. And he complains how everyone else around him is really incompetent and not really doing their job, but he is also terrible at his job.
He's the editor-in-chief. He's got people to do his job for
He
him.
still has things to do. I mean, editors do stuff. They do all of the he's involved in it. He has to supervise all of these people. I'm not quite sure what an editor exactly does in a large newspaper. I know what a publisher does at a publishing company because I worked in one, and his job was basically making sure we all did our jobs and also talking to people and sending emails and dealing with stuff and doing all important stuff that I don't understand because I wasn't that important to understand
I'm sure Terry Bite will send an email as soon as it's invented.
it. Yes, I'm sure he will.
He's been waiting with bated breath for some form of electronic mail.
I bet the moment he gets an email, he would just start yelling at Bark Bent to come and help tell him how to figure it out. Then Bark Bent will dress as Super Dog or Super Pup, and he'll throw it out the window, like the whole computer. Can you imagine transplanting this entire thing into like 1994 and giving it like computers and stuff? And just doing the same thing. They're all idiots, and then they probably blow themselves up because they're stupid. Meanwhile, in the actual episode, Super Pup flies back. Oh, where am I? Oh, Super Bop, I guess, goes to find the thing. I've completely lost where I was.
Super Pup goes off to find Pamela
That's the
Poodle,
one.
who has been kidnapped and strapped to a rocket, so she will be the first person to go to the
Oh,
moon.
yeah, where's my note for that? I've lost my place in the notes. Oh, I found. Oh, I'm back where I was.
So that's going to be a pretty big thing for women, right? Who says the 50s aren't progressive? First person on the moon,
Yeah.
woman. Way to go, 1950s. Oh, wait, no, hang on.
But hold on. Wolfingham remarks that they'll show them Russians by putting a woman in space by tying her to a bomb. Yeah, you'll show the Russians. You'll show the Russians just how you can explode a person or dog. And the thing is that Pamela Poodle is just yelling, "Help me, Super Pup," over and over and over, but the expression on the mask never changes. She looks really happy, but she's yelling about how much peril she's in. It's really not helping the actress who's doing the voiceover.
And at this point, we get an explanation of a continuity
Yeah,
error.
this is brilliant.
So the mouse pops up out of the drawer back in Bark Bent's office and says, "In case you're wondering why the Professor Sheepdip's car has changed, it's because they knew it was going to be a rough ride and that they didn't want to wreck the new car."
Which a new car was never established.
No, it's just there.
Yeah.
It's blatant covering of the
It's
tracks.
blatantly going, we've got footage of this car going over a cliff, and it's not the car that we used for the other scenes, so we'll just use the puppet to explain it. And
Because we'll get
they bother
letters.
to explain that plot point away, or that plot continuity error away, and nothing else, but the car was the most important part.
That continuity.
You can't have terrible continuity in this.
So Super Puff arrives.
He arrives and he very quickly gets her out of the off of the bomb, and sets the bomb gets set off, and it chases Sheepdip and Wolfing thing down the dirt road. Because was it always going to do
I don't know. It certainly seemed to be a surprise to both Pamela and Super
this?
Pub.
And to Sheepdip. No one figured out this was going to happen, but apparently it did. And it doesn't quite blow them up, though. It just kind of knocked. The car goes over a cliff, and then there's an explosion, which seems to mostly be the car itself exploding on impact. And then for the second time, we have the villains exploding, and this time they get arrested by Beagle, who just kind of gets in there at the end and claims the victory. It's like, I told you I'd get you back. It's like, you didn't do anything. You just showed up. And apparently the Terry Bite was there as well, for reasons.
There you go. He's reporting, Patrick, and you were criticizing him for
He's
not
not
doing jobs
reporting,
earlier.
he's just there. There's no evidence he's reporting.
He's scoping out the crime scene. He's doing the beat, keeping it with real. Gotta show the lackeys that he still knows how to be a reporter.
I have a strange feeling that basically this is the entire population of this city, and now everyone has seen it, so there's no need to report it. Apart from the mouse. The mouse isn't there.
The Daily Bugle in this universe is just like a sheet with all the stuff that happened today. One
Yeah,
page.
probably. And I'm guessing seeing,
Super Pup did that thing everybody
and I'm
saw.
guessing, since everybody is working for the paper, and the only person who doesn't seem to get the paper or doesn't seem to get out of the office is the mouse. The mouse is the only person who actually, person? That's a weird sentence. The mouse is the only creature in the entire thing that actually reads the paper.
Hang on. No. At the beginning, they established that there was a woman and a paper boy, so there are at least two readers of the paper and one employee who delivers that paper.
That implies that the delivery boy actually reads the paper. But then again, it is the 50s, so I guess, probably does.
But doesn't he have to yell the headlines when he's on the
No,
bike?
that's not a paper boy's job. That's like a, or is it? I don't, I'm not, I actually don't know. Print is dead, no one cares.
Yeah, now you tweet the headlines, and people decide what the content of the article is without reading the tweet.
What 10 amazing things Super Pop did this week will totally amaze you.
Number 7 will make you cry.
12 ways in which 12 ways in which Super Pop can save your life without you even knowing.
The 8 hottest tea parties this week.
BuzzFeed has ruined journalism.
So Super Pup flies away, and Pamela Poodle says, "Isn't he wonderful?"
And the mouse says, everyone knows Super Pup is wonderful.
And as he flies away, the narrator tells us to be with them next time when your product, the best of its kind in the world, sponsors Super Pup.
That was brilliant. It was like, be with us again when your product, the best of its kind in the world, presents the adventures of Super Pup. That isn't, I had to replay that because it was bonkers.
It's at the start
Is
as
it? You
well.
catch it at the start.
Yeah, at the start, Super Pup is also brought to us by your product.
Wow, your product is really great. I really like your product.
The best of its kind in the world.
This, however, is not the best of its kind in the world.
I really enjoyed watching this.
Because it was so dumb.
It's trying to be a Tex Avery cartoon. It doesn't really succeed at that.
It's trying to be a lot of things. I don't think it succeeds at any of them.
But I had so much fun. I had to stop the video because I was laughing so much when that nuclear explosion happened.
You cruel, heartless man.
What? He threw this paper airplane into a magic formula, threw out the window, and then there was a nuclear explosion. That is hilarious.
You say that now, but the fallout, that's going to kill them all.
They'll get minor injuries. They seem to be able to survive worse than that.
You just wait until the entire population of wherever this was comes down with radiation poisoning.
I'd assume it's some sort of dog pun on Metropolis.
Dogtropolis,
Barkalypse.
Barktropolis, Houndtropolis.
Barkropolis.
Pretty bad. It's a pretty bad thing to not actually establish where the place you are is.
But then it could be any city. It could be a city like yours.
Just like in the Tick.
If it's filled with dog men.
My city is filled with dog men. Haven't you seen them?
Patrick, you've already been told by the UN that those dog men are a crime.
They are not a crime. They are the next generation of human evolution and dog evolution, and they make damn good French fries. Ask them to run a newspaper, however, and it all goes wrong. Don't understand the concept of journalism. Or printing presses.
So where are we going to rank this?
I don't think it's one of the greatest things we've ever watched, because I didn't really enjoy it that much. I thought it was just.
It's no Batman 66.
It really isn't.
Yeah. Batman 66, you get the idea that they were in on the joke. I mean, I don't think they were playing it seriously. How
They
could
weren't
you?
really. They kind of they were playing. They were playing it. They were basically playing it to kid, playing to a low common denominator child demographic, basically, rather than just being stupid and funny for this for the sake of being stupid and funny and hoping it's entertaining, which I think is the best way of doing anything. If you're trying to be stupid and funny, not like you're like making a documentary about Auschwitz or something, that would be the worst idea.
Super Pulp, not a documentary about Auschwitz. Patrick Brogan, 2015.
That is not what I said.
Is now.
You are taking me out of context.
I said it. I'm just attributing it to you.
Although it is true, because this is not about Auschwitz, it's about dogs. And I'm looking at the rankings here, and I would put it probably maybe at a push. For pure weirdness, it's top 10. Like, you're not going to get anything weirder than this. Probably for a while. I'm looking at it, and I would say the only thing comparable on the list is Pride of the X-Men. So better or worse than Pride of the X-Men is the question.
Certainly had less plot than Pride of the X-Men.
But it managed to have two plots in the space of 20 minutes, which is twice as many plots as Pride of the X-Men. But Pride of the X-Men would have done all those plots in the same time frame of 10 minutes or whatever it was. I think part of the X-Men was 10 minutes long. It probably wasn't.
It was 20. It was a half-hour episode of TV.
Could have had more plots. Could have had more talking dogs. Either above or below part of the X-Men, I think.
I'd go below because I really enjoyed this, but I just can't put it above the X-Men.
Would you happy to have it above Red Dwarf coupling and Doctor Strange?
Well, Doctor Strange was really long.
Yeah, it was.
And about the same amount of stuff happened.
That's a really bad indication for your show when you can say about the same stuff happened in your really long TV movie as happened in this 20-minute show about dog superheroes where all the actors are dwarves.
Now, admittedly, no one got hypnotized by Jessica Walter.
That we saw.
It was happening in the background.
I don't know if Jessica Walter was a. She was probably alive. She was probably very young at that time. But you never know. She might have been there. We can't prove that. They were
There's no
all.
evidence to say Jessica Walter was not on the set of Super Pup
It's true.
when she was 17 years old.
They were all wearing masks. And only some of those actors have Wikipedia pages. Which, in my mind, is a clear indication that they might not exist.
Someone may have been operating under a pseudonym.
And that someone was Jessica Walter. Okay, so eighth.
Okay, eighth. This is the eighth greatest thing we have watched.
Not ever, of course.
Just in the course
Because,
of
like,
this show.
I've seen some good movies, but Super Bub.
Oh,
Oh,
wow.
wow. Citizen
That's
Kane.
literally the eighth greatest thing I've seen.
Better than, better than Ghostbusters. Better than, The Voyage Home. Better than Twin Peaks. Better than, Doctor Who. I don't know. I'm just reading my DVDs right here. Better than all of these things because it got dogs and they're talking and they got little people inside them.
I was ex literally expecting this to be atrocious. I'm so pleasantly surprised that this much fun with
I'm pleasantly surprised that you can link this directly to Child Bride. And it had a suicide bomber.
We have different levels of fun.
That, in context, kind of reflects poorly on me. I also enjoy that you connect this to freaks, purely because I like the idea that you can connect something this stupid to exploitation movies from the 30s. And to Johnny Ek. Everyone likes Johnny Ek. And Tom Waits. Everyone likes Tom Waits. Well, they better like Tom Waits. Do you like Tom Waits, Alan? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay,
I like that bit when he's in Shrek
that saves our friendship.
too.
Because, after 20 years, I find out you don't like Tom Waits.
Over.
Over. It's
Done.
done. Podcast over.
Majority of my life wasted.
On you. Oh, okay. Let's stop filling for time and actually do the ranking bit here. Okay. So, the new top 10 is. At number 10, Coupling UK. Perhaps it shouldn't have been made. At number 9 is Doctor Strange. Jessica Walters wasn't dressed as a dog for this. At number 8, The Adventures of Super Pup. It's got nuclear explosions. Possibly Jessica Walters. It's got a guy who was in Freaks. And, I don't know, do you like talking dogs? Because it's got talking dogs. And it's better than Puccinski. Pride of the X-Men's at number 7. It goes really quickly, and I don't remember it at all, probably because it was so long. J.J. Godot's at number 6. Not an archaeologist, but she did save Orson Welles. At number 5, Tag Team. With Tag Team of Wrestlers become a Tag Team of Cops, it's a natural road to hilarity, or whatever. Number 4, it's Pain. That was Fawlty Towers, but different, mostly American. At number 3, it's The Cage, which kind of rapey. At number 2 is The Coltons, not rapey at all. Also had a dog that fought crime. Froggy. Everyone loves Froggy, especially MacGyver. At number 1, we brought him a ball. At number 1, it's Heat Vision and Jack. Had no dog. Okay, had a dog, actually. And Heat Vision and Jack is also had a nuclear explosion type thing. And Heat Vision Jack is great. The best thing ever. And number 1 on our list. And this has been really weird. As this episode's sent to be lately. Alan, happy with that?
Yes, and I'm also happy with the weird episodes.
Yes. Okay. This is certainly even a thing we did this week. It's been another pilot season. Next week, I believe we are looking at Look Well.
Yes, look well. Created by Conan O'Brien.
And starring Adam West, who doesn't like that. So join us for that. That's been another episode of Pilot Season. I have been Patrick Brogan, and you can find me at theunemployedhistorian.com, at nerdvice.com, at other places, which you can all find via going to theunemployedhistorian.com. I don't need to list out a whole lot of things, because you're smart people, you can find things. You should find this podcast on iTunes and you should rate it because you are smart and you are lovely and we like you very much. Isn't that right, Alan?
That's very true. We appreciate you all.
And if people wanted to find you, Alan, and tell them how much they like you, how could they do that?
Well, you could do that on Twitter, where I'm at Alan Bearn, which is spelled ALANBEIRNE. I'm alanbearn.tumblr.com for my Tumblr. Or you could go to my website, which is albearn.com, although it seems to have just left. It was here a minute ago. You know what's funny? You never see my website and Reddit in the same place at the same time.
Be with us again when your product, the best of its kind in the world, presents Pilot Season.
Dun 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 dun
That's not
dun
our
dun dun
theme, Alec.
dun.
I'm hoping the people from, Audible or MeUndies or Ending the Fonts podcast will hear that and think, yeah, let's sponsor them. Goodbye.
Bye.
Or Foot Cardigan.